You are listening to the SmackDown Breakdown with Atlee Green and Adam Cohn.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the SmackDown Breakdown here at Gerwick.net, your source for pro wrestling news since 1997. Some people call me the Slam Master, others call me the Sultan of Slam Jitsu. Today, you all can call me Atlee Green, and I'm joined, as always, by the Funky Weapon himself, Adam Cohn.
What's up, Atlee? Can we talk about what really matters other than this episode of SmackDown? And Star Wars Rogue One comes out in 10 days. This is what really matters. This is what we should be talking about. What do you think?
If we were on any other website, I would talk about Star Wars Rogue One all day long, every day. But we're here to talk about some pro wrestling. We're here to talk about the blue brand, which is SmackDown Live, which emanated from the Toyota Center in beautiful, in big Houston, Texas. And the show opened up with James Ellsworth kind of talking to AJ Styles. So first it was AJ Styles coming out to a mixed reaction. And then James Ellsworth came out and said AJ Styles was ducking him. Dean Ambrose comes out of nowhere and AJ Styles takes a powder. He leaves. And Dean Ambrose lays out James Ellsworth with the Dirty D's DDT and just leaves all casually. So turns out we're not going to have the advertised world title match between AJ Styles and James Ellsworth, which is pretty much a precautionary measure because AJ Styles was taken off the house show in Tyler, Texas yesterday as a precautionary measure, and now he's not wrestling tonight, so I wonder if he's going to work the house shows this weekend, or they're going to give him just a full week to rest until next week or whenever. So they didn't announce that the match was going to actually happen next week between Ellsworth and AJ Styles, so they're probably just taking this day-to-day. I just want to make sure that he's fully healed before they start having him wrestle again.
Atlee, so what you're saying is we didn't have the greatest main event of all time?
We did not have the greatest main event of all time. What we did have was a rematch for the WWE SmackDown Tag Team Championship as Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton, with Luke Harper in their corner, defeated Heath Slater and Rhino. And what I liked about this match was normally whenever Beauty and the Man Beast work tag team matches, Heath Slater usually takes the heat and then eventually makes the hot tag to Rhino, who cleans house. But I liked how this time it was Rhino who took the heat and then made the big hot tag to Heath Slater. But in the end, it didn't do them any good, as basically Bray Wyatt set up Heath Slater for the Sister Abigail, looked at Orton. Orton got in the ring. He flinged Bray Wyatt, of course, I'm speaking of. He flinged Heath Slater with Sister Abigail right into the clutches of Randy Orton for an RKO. 1, 2, 3, your winner, the new and improved Wyatt family. And while the match was just a match, nothing good, nothing bad, I liked the story they would tell, especially on commentary, where they were just basically almost burying Rhino, Slater, and the tag team division, because they just kept talking about how this is a once-in-a-lifetime tag team with Orton and Bray Wyatt teaming up, and how nobody is going to stop them. And then, as a matter of fact, they thought that Rhino and Heath Slater took their rematch clause way too early. It should have took some time to prepare. But I like how they're hyping up the Wyatt family with Orton and Bray Wyatt as this new indestructible tag team. I think that's going to make it even sweeter of a story when they finally break up. If, of course, they do break up. And if they break up, it's probably going to be with Orton turning on Bray Wyatt to get his revenge.
There are a few things to talk about here in this spot that, honestly, I think we need to spend a little bit of time on. One that may have gone unnoticed to some people, just because it's not exactly noticeable. Did you see the creepy picture of thingies? It changed. Orton is now in that little blip segment thingy, whatever you want to call it, that hits before and after Bray Wyatt.
The transition from the live promo to the commercial, live promo to the ring, he was in it on Sunday at TLC as well.
I didn't notice him on Sunday, but it was blatantly obvious tonight.
And they melded the music together as well. You hear the song opens up with "I Hear Voices in My Head," and then it slows down and transitions beautifully, I might add, into the Wyatt family theme. So they're really blending all the attributes of Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt to really get over the fact that this is not a ruse. This is a well-oiled machine of a tag team.
Remember how I've been saying that I think that Randy's going to get so far in the family, he's going to get Bray's power? Well, now he's in that transition thing, and whenever they decide to do the breakup and the blow-off, maybe Randy is going to be able to use that power now. So it'll be very interesting to see that down the road. They get to work on their tag finisher. It looked lackluster. I'm sorry. Orton's RKOs are beautiful, but I didn't even really consider that a fling. It was like, come on. Like, they really need to work on their tag finisher because they could have something special with it. But that's pretty much all I got here. And I like the little whoopsie that the production truck did. I'm not sure if anyone noticed, but SmackDown tag titles are the Nichols. And they did the little picture of the Raw Tag Team Championships, which are the bronze pennies.
I did not notice that either, but kudos to you for picking it out, Adam. And just one more thing to speak on about the whole Orton Bray Wyatt thing. If Orton does end up turning on Bray Wyatt, I hope it's a much deeper reason than simply Orton wanting to get revenge. I hope it's something where they make up some storyline or some narrative where Orton feels that he's never ever come across a challenge, a monster like Bray Wyatt, and that he feels the only way he realized the only way he could have defeated Bray Wyatt was by joining the Wyatt family and truly learning how the Wyatt family ticked in order to get a foothold and eventually vanquish this monster once and for all. I hope it's just not I just wanted revenge, I just wanted to fool him and get in his head, and now I'm going to kick his ass. I mean, they have a good opportunity to tell a story with some depth. Will they do it? I don't know. Time only can tell, but we get into another match where the Hype Brothers defeated the Ascension. There was really nothing much to this match. Back and forth for a little bit in the end. Ryder and Raleigh with the Hype Rider. And then we go to Miz TV, where the Miz comes out, talks about his win at TLC. He kind of tossed the fans saying, what? Where your you deserve it chance. And then he brings out Dean Ambrose as his guest. And then he kind of calls Dean Ambrose out for hitting James Ellsworth. And Dean Ambrose says that he gave Ellsworth everything. And Miz says, no, you didn't give him everything. You just used him as your puppet to kind of fuel and feed your own ego and your own agenda. So then Miz kind of insults Dean Ambrose by giving him the first ever Miz Participation Award. Ambrose gets in his face. Daniel Bryan comes out. And I like how the Miz kind of just sold it like, oh, damn, as soon as he heard the music. And then Daniel Bryan says, oh, in the main event, we're going to see Dean Ambrose versus the Miz. And then he goes, wait a minute. There's more. It's going to be for the Intercontinental Championship. So that was our main event for SmackDown Live. And Adam, what did you think about this segment overall?
I think the segment was a standard Miz TV segment. I did like the Miz Participation Award. And Dean just looks pissed. And rightfully so, and as he should be. And, you know, I'm not sure if many people, when they get screwed over in a spot, would hold the composure that Dean Ambrose did. I mean, I loved in the opening segment, Dean comes out, hits the dirty deeds on Ellsworth, and goes right back. Comes out, gets right in Miz's face, looks like everything is just continuing to get under Ambrose's skin. And I really love the storytelling by Dean throughout really this entire episode of SmackDown Live, where he put on the storytelling of, I'm pissed, don't screw with me.
And then we also had a segment where Carmella came out, and she kept on just making fun of Nikki Bella some more. And also, she made fun of Natalya. Kept on sticking to her story at TLC that Natalya is the one that attacked Nikki Bella. Kind of just said how she wishes she was as curvy as you. Natalya ran out, attacked her right away. They ran back to the locker room. And the match never got officially started. But it looked like there was a miscue there. Because they went back to the locker room. And they stayed on the entrance for a while. Then went back to the locker room. Natalya was just standing there for a few seconds, and then she kind of realized the camera was finally on her and started walking. And as she started walking, she unexpectedly bumped into Nikki Bella, where she doesn't know what to say. She's kind of trapped between a rock and a hard place because she's being accused of this awful thing. And Nikki just walks away in disgust. We don't know if she believes Carmella. We don't know if she believes Natalya. But Adam, who do you believe in this ongoing saga of who really attacked Nikki Bella at Survivor Series?
I really don't care.
You know, I actually read something online that I liked, and it involved Mickie James. Because Mickie James has been offered a WWE contract, which she got due to her amazing match with Asuka at NXT TakeOver Toronto. She has not accepted the offer yet, as of the last reports going around. But if she does decide to take the contract and go to the main roster, it'd be a pretty cool way to debut her, because obviously, with the question of who attacked Nikki Bella, you're obviously thinking it's somebody in the roster, but if they sign her, bring her in, it turns out that she's the culprit, it's like, okay, we didn't see this coming, because it was somebody that wasn't even on the roster yet. So that was a cool theory somebody brought. I wish I could remember the name of the person who brought it up, but that would be a cool way to bring back Mickie James if they went that way. But then they go to the next match, which is Baron Corbin versus Kalisto, which is the second rematch from TLC. And I really could care less about this match. Not because it's Kalisto, not because it's Baron Corbin, but because they didn't do anything. And what I mean by that is there was no drama, there was no heat, there was no spectacle, there was no story whatsoever. Because you figured after he hit the end of day, Baron Corbin hit the end of days on Kalisto, on that sea of steel chairs, which Adam, by the way, you called it on our preview show.
This is correct.
You figured, okay, that's a great way to blow off the feud between Kalisto and Baron Corbin. No, Kalisto wanted a rematch. He said in his interview that speed kills. And then, of course, Baron Corbin hit a wonderful end of days out of the tilt-a-whirl spin that Kalisto was trying to do to him, but that was it. I figured after he got the 1-2-3, he was going to take a chair, beat him down some more, wrap around the post, do something to kind of really just put his stamp on the fact that, hey, I won this feud, I'm the dominant one, and kind of get us thinking about what's next for Baron Corbin. But he hit the end of days, he posed in the middle of the ring like a chump, and that was it. And I'm thinking to myself, why did you even book this match if nothing out of the ordinary is going to happen? Because barely anything ordinary happened in this match either, let me tell you.
Atlee, you know, throughout this entire show, you know, I'm doing my thing, I'm taking my notes, getting ready for this podcast, and I couldn't continue to take notes. I wasn't sure what I was watching. Atlee, you made reference before, during our pre-show, that you thought this might have been like a tape SmackDown. It was that lackluster. It was poor. I thought I was watching Raw.
You're blowing my notes for the end of the show, Adam. Thank you.
Sorry.
Kayfabe, brother. Kayfabe. Goodness.
It is. Honestly, I thought I was watching Raw.
Shots fired. But anyway, we go to the next match where it's Chad Gable in singles action with Jason Jordan in this quarter as he defeated Tyler Breeze with Fandango. Of course, I forgot that Fandango and Tyler Breeze were doing the Fashion Police. And of course, Breeze gave Gable and Jordan fashion tickets for, you know, their lack of fashion. And the only part of this match that I really enjoyed, besides the O'Connor roll into the bridging German suplex, that's a move I always mark out for, but I really marked out for JBL mentioning that Tyler Breeze should have given Jushin Thunder Liger a fashion ticket. And I marked out for that, because of course whenever you mention Jushin Thunder Liger, I'm going to mark out for that. But Chad Gable and Jason Jordan gets the win, and my question is, what happened to the Usos? I don't remember or don't recall, maybe Adam, if you can help me figure this out, I don't recall seeing a definitive ending to the Usos and Rekha Alpha feud. And I liked the series of matches that I have. I liked it when they paired them off in singles matches. I liked the story of the Usos kind of just attacking those knees with that jumping super kick. But do you recall any finality to that particular feud? Because it seems like they've just forgot about it, not going to go back to it.
Yep, I don't even know what the Usos are. Do we need to put them? Do we need to put them on like milk cartons?
Milk cartons, APB, Amber Alert, or whatever you got to do. Put the watch out for the Usos brothers. They have not been seen in a little bit. I don't think they've been seen since Survivor Series, to tell you the truth. But then, speaking of seeing, we all saw Alexa Bliss's championship ceremony. She posed on the top rope. She got the big pyro display. And then she said, "Ding dong, the witch's champ." And then she said that Becky Lynch made a remark about me last week, of course, referring to her as the B word. And Alexa says, "Well, guess what? This little bitch now runs the whole SmackDown division." And then Becky Lynch interrupted. She said she didn't get the job done, but she couldn't stand this petulant little girl being the face of SmackDown. And Bliss said, "Call her whatever you want, as long as you call her champion." Lynch challenged her to a rematch right now. Bliss accepted, so we thought, until she ducked out and left. Really short segment, but I think it was okay for what it was. But you know what stood out to me more than anything? What stood out to me was that Rhino and Heath Slater clearly know how to handle WWE administrative matters much better than Becky Lynch, because the Beauty and the Man Beast had no problem getting their championship rematch. Becky Lynch did, so clearly Becky Lynch doesn't know how to go through the proper channels to get her rematch. So shame on you, Becky. Shame on you.
I gotta say, it is very, very nice to have Alexa finally as our SmackDown Live Women's Champion. It is about time. And honestly, I feel like this whole feud was way too long. I felt like the segment was thrown together, to be honest with you. And I think somehow, somewhere, whether it was the main event having to be changed, I think this segment seems like it was cut by about 3 to 5 minutes. Because I think Celebration, I'm thinking, okay, this is your 9 o'clock hour. This could be the main event segment. This could be how you lead off the show. But no, it was in the random 9:30 spot. And it wasn't much of a segment outside the pyros. And I don't get it.
No, I agree with you, Adam, because they almost forgot the pyro. And I don't know if they actually did, but it looked like they almost forgot the pyro because Alexa, at the beginning of the segment, stood on the top rope for a while before the pyro finally went off. And plus, usually when they do any type of celebration or statement or declaration, what have you, they always bring out the red carpet. They always change the color of the canvas to a different color. They have confetti. They have balloons. They have balloons. They have streamers. None of that here. It's like, okay, just get out there and put the fireworks over it. As you said, Adam, it seems like it was thrown together at the last minute. And speaking of things being thrown together at the last minute, the main event for the evening, which is the Intercontinental Championship match, saw The Miz defeat Dean Ambrose to do the distraction by one James Ellsworth, where Miz got the pin, got it from behind the skull-crushing finale for the 1-2-3. And the 20 minutes, this match lasted almost 20 minutes. It really just seemed like to me that they were killing time more than anything. It was like, okay, we have 20 minutes left of airtime. Let's just do some spots to keep the fans interested. And then when James Ellsworth does his thing, cost Dean the match, 1-2-3, take it home. And that's really what I thought of this entire show. I was like, take it home. Take it home. Because AJ Styles' injury definitely threw a monkey wrench into plans. You could tell that for sure because they were advertising the Ellsworth-AJ Styles match all throughout the day, all throughout last night as well. But they definitely thought better of it and said, we're not going to have AJ Styles wrestle. But this show is probably the weakest episode of SmackDown by far since the brand split. And it really seemed like one of those throwaway episodes of SmackDown during the spoiler era, where you could just follow SmackDown via the spoilers released on late Tuesday, early Wednesday morning, not even watch the show, because nothing of consequence happened. And that's what really bothered me about this show. Nothing of consequence took place whatsoever. And it seemed like WWE really just threw the towel on this one. Now, again, unfortunately, that's going to happen sometimes. WWE is going to throw in the towel sometimes because, you know, it's like for now, it's like 8 weeks to the Royal Rumble. So they haven't announced anything of circumstance. They haven't announced anything at all for the Royal Rumble yet. So, and they're probably not going to announce anything next week either. So that's just really a throwaway show that we're going to get sometimes. Raw's had quite a few of them, and SmackDown had one, but this is really disappointing because I hope this is not the beginning of a trend where, okay, we've tried hard enough for SmackDown, and now it's going to be just throwaway shows from here on end.
It's tough. First of all, Raw has been a throwaway show because that's just thrown together segments. I don't know why I keep torturing myself and watching Raw, but that's besides the point. Over here on the Blue Brand, you know, Atlee, I kind of had a feeling that this was eventually going to happen. The run was going to be over. We'd have that one hiccup of a show. And you know what? We had the hiccup of a show. And like you said, stuff like this and shows like this are going to happen. I'm going to do a comparison. AJ Styles, James Ellsworth. Okay, on paper, AJ wins that match and everyone's brains. AJ wins that match. But it's a marquee matchup that people actually want to see. Over on Raw, you have Sasha and Charlotte announced for an Iron Man match at Roadblock, end of the line. Okay, I should be marking out and super extremely excited for that match. I'm not, because I can't get behind the product, because the whole product over on Raw seems like thrown together segments to fill 3 hours. SmackDown has more of a coherency to it. However, this show felt like a Raw in. It felt like segments were just thrown together to fill time. And like you said about the main event segment, it was 20 minutes of saying, hopefully, just go home, just go home, just go home. I wanted it to go home, and I'm like, oh my goodness, this episode of SmackDown was a little bit painful to me.
No, I mean, that's just the par for the course of WWE, but it's even more disappointing being that SmackDown has been really good since the brand split, and now, you know, not so much this week. Hopefully they can turn things around next week. But let's talk about one more thing before we close out here on the SmackDown Breakdown, Adam. And I want to talk about the AJ Styles injury a little bit in depth. There was a SmackDown house show last night on Monday at, in Tyler, Texas, and they pulled AJ Styles from the show as a precautionary measure, and they also pulled him from tonight's episode of SmackDown Live. And when I'm reading the lineup of what occurred on SmackDown, as far as that house show in Tyler, Texas, it really, really shows a severe lack of depth on SmackDown as far as stars. And I want to get your feelings on this, Adam, because when I look at this roster of SmackDown and I see who wrestled and everything, I'm thinking to myself, they got to create some new stars and some new stars quick, because without John Cena and AJ Styles, SmackDown really has nothing else of real, legitimate, marquee value. And Adam, you may agree, may not agree, but talk to me.
No, they don't. And there were two guys sitting in NXT that are marquee names, and that would be Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura.
Well, Adam, I thought you would certainly say Dean Ambrose and disagree with me on this.
Oh, I totally disagree, because Ambrose is the only other marquee name.
Thank you. Thank you. I thought you would disagree with me on that. Thank you. Don't play it safe, Adam. Don't play it safe here on the SmackDown Breakdown. We don't do that here.
No, but it's like, do you see the names that come to mind? Like, if I were to think marquee names, if you all have Cena or Styles, I want Joe and Nakamura before I would even think of Ambrose, because that's the star power those names bring. This goes back to what we've been saying about WWE having a very tough time of not making stars.
Dream call-ups notwithstanding, let's talk about the SmackDown roster in its current form, because I'm going to read the results for the SmackDown House Show in Tyler, Texas, without John Cena and without AJ Styles. Jack Swagger, Apollo Crews, Zack Ryder, and Mojo Rawley defeated The Ascension and the Vaudevillains. Baron Corbin defeated Kalisto, TLC rematch. Kurt Hopkins came out and lost to Kalisto in a quick match afterwards. Nikki Bella defeated Carmella and Natalya in a triple threat match. Kane and American Alpha defeated Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton, and Luke Harper in a six-man tag. Heath Slater and Rhino defeated Breeze Dango. Alexa Bliss defeated Becky Lynch in the Intercontinental Championship match. Was a triple threat match. The Miz defeated Dean Ambrose and Dolph Ziggler, with James Ellsworth running amok. So, when you look at that and you're paying your hard-earned money to go to a professional wrestling show, I gotta tell you, if I go to a wrestling show, or I'm looking to go to a wrestling show, and that's the lineup in front of me, it really is a weak roster without AJ Styles and John Cena performing. Again, John Cena is doing this thing in Hollywood, doing this thing outside WWE right now, and AJ Styles is hurt. You can't fault him for that. But this just really shows how badly WWE needs to make new stars. Yesterday, which has been a topic of conversation for what seems like it's been going on for like almost 10 years, but Adam, what would you do differently as far as a show like this? Like, would that card that is read to you, would you pay to see that card?
No.
Okay, exactly, because it's nothing of consequence took place, and it's the same thing with this episode of SmackDown Live. If we're in the spoiler era, I just would have read the spoilers, and okay, that's what happened.
Exactly. I would not pay to see that match, and that card, rather, in Tyler, Texas. And quite honestly, I would have asked for a refund on this episode of SmackDown Live if I went and got a ticket. It was poor. It was lackluster. It was thrown together. The only other big name is Dean Ambrose, and Ambrose did everything he could tonight to try and hold the ship up. And the problem is two pillars in Cena and Styles were not there or were not wrestling. But there's a lot of megastar power over on Raw. Maybe it's time you get some trades going. If you were to tell me, Atlee, and you take Sami Zayn and Cesaro and you put them on SmackDown, I'm going to go buy that ticket to Tyler, Texas, and I would have been fine with it, because those two names are bigger than, outside of Dean Ambrose and Randy Orton, and maybe Bray Wyatt, are the only other names that I would pay to see.
And one name that I did not read on this results for the house show in Tyler, Texas, as well as a name I did not read on the SmackDown Live breakdown that we've done here, is Naomi. She was not on the house show. She didn't work TLC in any capacity, and she didn't work the show tonight. And there's a story going about that she is not happy with being snubbed by WWE as of late. I guess somebody asked her as to why she was left off the graphic of Total Divas when Total Divas was nominated for Best Reality Series in 2016 by the WIN Awards. And Paige was left off as well. But Alicia Fox, who is not in the current season, was included too. So there is you know, some credence to it, just like last minute graphic put together. But a fan asked Naomi on Twitter, you know, why they do you dirty like that? And Trinity, aka Naomi, responded, quotes, "The hell if I know, but I'm about over all the BS. I'm giving my all, and I have since day one," end quotes. And then it turns out that she also says, quote, "I'm the only diva with no storyline. Close quote. And then Summer Rae and Sasha Banks actually tweeted out their support for Naomi, where Summer Rae said, well, I thought it was kind of cool. She said, "I've said it multiple times, but I'll say it again. When I grow up, I want to be like Naomi. Hashtag Team Naomi." So that's the question. Why do you think WWE is kind of leaving Naomi on the bench? I mean, they're kind of doing a Cam Newton deal here. I mean, I don't know if she failed to follow the dress code or whatnot, but, you know, what is going on here?
I have no idea what's going on, but it's an absolute shame and a travesty, and Naomi needs to get on TV. I don't know if the repackaged Glow gimmick was working. I mean, Atlee, we're not at every house show. We don't know how that gimmick is being received. We only see what's on TV. We don't see in these house shows where, you know, as you know, sometimes different gimmicks are tested. There are certain entrances that are tested. If that wasn't connecting, and I don't think it was really connecting that well, at least in my opinion, for me, I didn't get the remix. I didn't get the repackage. And she's too talented not to be on TV right now when that division needs it.
Well, Naomi is super talented in the ring, and she has a pretty decent character. I know the Glow thing is not for everybody, but outside of that, the character is pretty good. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But when you see somebody super talented, you know, not being used at all, much less being used to their potential, you start to wonder if WWE knows something that we don't. And I liken this to like a big casting on a movie. Case in point, Batman vs. Superman. The whole world blew up when Ben Affleck was announced as Batman, and everybody hated it. Everybody thought it was going to be the fall of DC Comics. And then you're thinking to yourself, okay, clearly Warner Brothers knows something that we don't. And it turns out Ben Affleck's Batman is being heralded as arguably the best on-screen Batman of all time. So, but then for a WWE example, everybody for years was saying Dean Ambrose needs to be the WWE champion. And then they finally put the belt on Dean Ambrose. And then it turns out that it was a crappy run as champion. So crappy that you really didn't want Dean Ambrose to go over on AJ Styles, who is the babyface in this equation. So, and it just says, man, like, it was such a bad championship run. You don't want to see it again. And that just tells me either, you know, Dean Ambrose just pissed somebody off, or maybe they just knew that Dean Ambrose is not talented enough to be the guy. And they decided to try it, and it turned out they were right. And I'm wondering if there's something about Naomi that they don't trust, they don't like, or something that, with her skill set, that they're just not confident with, that we don't know about. But folks, that is going to just about do it here for this edition of the SmackDown Breakdown here at GERWECK.net. That is GERWECK.net. Adam, before we get out of here, plug your stuff, buddy.
You guys got to follow me on Twitter and the Fantasy Life app, at AdamWX21.
And y'all can follow me on Twitter, at AtleeGreen, and definitely check out my blog at thegreenscreen.net. But folks, thanks for joining us here on the SmackDown Breakdown. For Adam Cohn, this is Atlee Green. Sayonara, suckers. We'll see you next time.
Laters, peoples.
For the latest in pro wrestling news, rumors, and opinions, keep it locked at the official YouTube channel of GERWECK.net. That is GERWECK.net. GERWECK.net. Pro wrestling since 1997.